Hello and welcome to Two Fat Expats, where we're all about packing as much into your expat life as you can. And that's what we mean when we say fat. We mean full and overflowing. This expat podcast is listened to in over 160 countries, and we have a Facebook group with over 13,000 members. I'm Kirsty Rice. I'm an Aussie based in Qatar, and each week I'm joined by Nikki Moffat, who's also an Aussie. She's over in Hamburg, Germany. Say hello, Nikki.
Hello, Nikki.
Together we have 12 locations between us, which is a lot of new front door keys and mailing addresses with crazy postcodes and cats that can't quite find the back door. How are you, Nikki Moffat?
I'm good. I'm really good. I have had an extraordinary week this week. So I have this great friend from uni and she's never been on social media. So I don't know if you have friends like that. You think, oh, it'd be so good if they're on social media because I could just know about their life. And every 6 months or so, I just do a check. There's two people from my past life that I always just check to see if they're on there.
Yeah.
And this week she sent me a friend request on Facebook and I'm so excited. And she honestly, we have not seen each other for a long, long time since I left Australia. And it was so great catching up on our lives. And she honestly did not know where I was living, how many children I had.
Wow. That was old school.
It was old school, yes.
Okay, so Nikki, we are going to follow the usual plan and format, which is breaking up the podcast into five topics, which will be geographically challenged, where we talk about the impact of having lived in more than one place. We'll also cover expat relationships that can be anyone that you've met in your expat travels.
We also look at expat tech, where we look at the latest tech available to expats or any tech tips we have, and expat money, where Mr. X comes back. We didn't scare him off. And we discuss money issues that are particularly relevant to expats.
And Nikki, you've done location, location, location again this week, where you ask your fat five questions. And this week it's tea. Okay, shall we kick off with geographically challenged? Now, I believe we had a phone call because last week I was complaining about the reflecting that my children do and how much reflecting they had. And I think we had a call from Cindy, who is an IB teacher in an international school, and she maybe gave us a bit of an insight into the reflecting. Shall we have a listen?
Yes, I think she tells it best.
Steve, my name's Cindy. I'm an international teacher based in Bangkok, Thailand. I was just listening to your latest podcast where you were talking about reflection. So I thought I'd weigh in. Certainly it's a big buzzword right now, and even us as teachers, we do need to check ourselves and make sure that we don't spend too much of our day reflecting and navel gazing. I think what sets humans aside from other species is our ability to engage in metacognition, like thinking about thinking. And so one of the key tenets of the IB program is to open up time and space for kids to engage in that reflection and that metacognition. And research is showing us that as we get into an increasingly sort of automated world where we've got things like robots, AI coming into play, that special skill that we hold as a species of being able to really delve into the way that we made our choices and made our decisions is going to be a key 21st century skill. Keep up the good work. Absolutely love your podcast.
I want to say to Cindy, thank you. I thought she handled that very, very well. And yeah, I hadn't thought about it. I guess we are the only primates maybe that think about how we think.
Yes, and metacognition. Cindy, you just had all the words. I'm convinced. I'll reflect on my reflection possibly.
So you and I are both geographically challenged at the moment because we're both actually going through a similar experience in that I am buying a unit and you are selling your house. And we are trying to do these things in opposite countries in that – so my situation is my eldest is starting university this year, and when we did the money math of residential living for her or the fact that we have four children who are all going to go through the same process, we realised that financially it made a lot more sense to buy like a small unit, just a – unit out in the burbs. So we have bought one, but of course now we have the grief of husband in Qatar, I'm here in Australia, mortgage going through the Australian bank, and that in itself was a drama because we have a royal commission happening here at the moment in the banking sector. So suddenly they clamped down on everything and we basically had to provide I can't even begin to explain, Nikki, how much information we had to provide to get our mortgage, down to every page of our lease agreement in Qatar, every page of our passport copied, you know, at the front and the back of our RPs, that absolutely every little dot the I's and cross the T's. Anyway, it ended. The story is still in progress, but yesterday my husband had to go to the Australian Embassy to have documents witnessed and signed, and he then has put them in a courier that will come to me in the next few days, and then I'll head off and do the signing and the witnessing and the rest of it as well. So yeah, it's not, nothing's ever easy in this process, is it, when you're an expat? Like, it's
no, we have to do a power of attorneys for someone to basically conduct the sale of our house for us. So I had to go through my list of most responsible friends, and you can do a mail-in thing where you do it all, but I think it involves going to the embassy. Yep. And there's no embassy. Yep. Here. So the power of attorney, you don't have to go to the embassy. So, but we do have to go to a notary with a witness that's not related to us. So I have to find someone to take as a witness to a notary, and then the documents have to be sent to the States and get there in time to conduct the closing on time. And it's just, it's very, and then there's all these different tax documents, and I'm not sure, I'm waiting to speak to the accountant about which one we should fill in. So basically I'm going to fill them all in and send them all over, and then yes, just get our power of attorney guy just to take one in. Yes. When he goes to
add and in. It's when you and your husband start having these bizarre decisions, like it all gets so hard that he suddenly goes, oh, bugger it, let's just put the house in your name. Surely that can't be a problem. And you're like, I don't think that's wise. I think we need to probably talk to an accountant before we start saying, look, it was just too hard to go to the embassy and get all these documents signed and pay for the $150 for the courier. Do you know, like, it just.
Yeah.
But, yes, so I guess if we had advice to give, what would your advice be, Nikki, for how to do this? Like, just make sure you sell your house before you leave?
Yes, yes, that would be one of them, but also never be a forced seller would be my other discussion. Yes. Point. So I just think, yeah, look, just there are always things that are going to come up that are frustrating. And if you end up in an argument with your spouse or the person you need to sign the paperwork with, remember to blame the situation and not the person.
My other advice would be make sure you have a friend at the local embassy, which my husband has made sure he's done. So that situation is a little easier. And, you know, always trying to arrange it around an embassy function. I know that he happened to be there last night getting everything witnessed, but there also happened to be a function with booze and celebratory events. But, yes, I think, I don't know if there's any other way around it, I guess, of maybe you would do the power of attorney just
before
in case.
You leave.
Yeah, before you leave.
Yeah.
That would.
And that's something that we did discuss with friends before we left, and then we didn't do it.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Tips for young players.
Yes. Well, that's what I was looking for. I think that's a good one. So, yeah, if you're leaving property behind, make sure you've got a power of attorney in place before you go. And the same for if you're leaving your country of residence to go off and be an expat, same thing, you know, maybe get all those things in place as well, that you've got a power of attorney. Okay, that is geographically challenged.
Very.
If you want to leave a message and send in a question, please go to twofatexpats.com and you'll see a little microphone on our website and you can leave your message there.
Excellent. And if you have some more tips about what to do in this situation, also send them in and we'd be happy to share them.
So, Nikki, expat relationships. My one at the moment is a very personal one. It's my family and the situation that we find ourselves in at the moment. I currently have 3 children now who are back in Australia at school, and only one child who's back living with us in Qatar. So with our different school years, we had the deal of we came home for Christmas, we had a lovely Christmas vacation. I then went back to Qatar with my one child, who I settled back into school in Qatar, while my sister looked after my big 3 here in Australia, because we now have one who's about to start university, one who's going into year 11, and the other one who's just started at boarding school. But then I had to come back here to start child number 3 into boarding school. And what I've done with the 2 previous children is been around for the first 3 weeks, so that I'm here for that first weekend when they get out of the boarding house, so that they feel, you know, I don't want them to feel that they were just, you know, dropped in another country and see ya and off I went. Yeah. Good luck with that. So, of course, it has been amazing to be here with them. And, you know, there is not a day that goes past that I am not convinced, you know, that this is the right way to do it. Because every day, you know, I get a phone call or a text that says, "Mum, you know, can you buy me a duffel bag? Because I've got a backpack and everybody else uses a duffel bag for rowing. Do you think you could get me a duffel bag?" And of course, you know, your mother angst goes, "Yes, I'll get one right now, because I can't bear for you to be slightly unusual, or that there to be some chance, you know, that you're not slotting in, you know, with everybody." And, you know, it just, all those things that you would never do. You know, if we were in Qatar and he came home and said, "I need a duffel bag for rowing," I'd say, "You have a perfectly good backpack." Yeah. But because we're here, there is that, you know, I'm acutely aware that he's the kid with the American accent. He's the kid that hasn't grown up here, that I watch those other kids and I listen to them, and they are me as a child, you know. They are the country kid who's come to the city, and I look at him and I go, you're not that kid. You're the expat kid that's come back to Australia.
Yeah, that's interesting. I was talking to a friend this morning. So she has been here for 2 years, and she's just taking her grade 11 daughter back to the US over our February break to do some college tours. Yes. And she was talking about what kind of colleges they're going to visit. And she says, you know, she wants to show her a big college, a small college, a city college, a country college, you know, a private college, whatever. She said, but she thinks, like, 3 years ago, before they ever lived overseas, a small private college in a college town might have been a good place for her. And now she thinks she's not sure that would be the right fit, because she's had this whole other experience. And will she be able to slot in and feel comfortable in that experience?
Yes.
As a college kid, which has a little bit less parental involvement than you're able to have now.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's an interesting conversation.
Yeah. So while I feel that I am doing everything right by being here in Australia right now and being available for the child who's about to start university and the child who's just gone into year 11 and the child who's just started boarding school, there is the fact that I have my youngest guy who's in Qatar, and he's sad. Like, he is very sad, and it has been definitely the most difficult transition that we've done. And I feel really quite stupid that I didn't realize just how bad it was going to be. Now, we thought we'd done well in that we organized for my mother-in-law to go back, and so she's been there with him the whole time. And, you know, obviously my husband's there, and he's slipped straight back into his routine. He's at school, he's, you know, playing baseball, he's having sleepovers with his best mate. You know, life has continued on in that regard normally for him. But for him, what I hadn't really considered is, it's not that he's lost his brother, that's definitely not it. It's that the 3 of them are here, and to him that balance isn't right, in that he feels like, what if they, he actually said, what if they forget about me? Because in his, because in his mind they're all together now. Of course, because when he was here,
But of course,
no,
they're not.
That's yeah. right. And when he was here, you know, they were all on holidays and it was all great fun. And, you know, you're living that sort of vacation holiday experience. But he hasn't seen that everybody's gone back to school, that, you know, his big sister's working most of the time. So she's, you know, busy doing working things. And when she's not doing working things, she's out with her friends. You know, that the second one started back at school and she's now busy doing homework. And, you know, when they come home on the weekends, it's not like it was before. And, yeah, so it has been really, really tough. And I think, you know, you get quite used to it. You know, I found the first child so traumatic. I found that whole experience, which we've talked about before, you know, very traumatic, but we moved on and we got better at it. And second child, we got really good at it. And so I think I just thought third child, this is going to be a breeze. And I hadn't sort of thought about the imbalance, because there is a real imbalance now for us.
Well, Kirsty, this comes back to one of my favorite recent books, Safe Passage Across Networks, which talks about schools, but really also talks about your family situation. It's a secret pain of the stayer.
Yes.
So the stayer who is not doing anything new and thinks everyone's off on these new and exciting adventures, but still has his same routine, has his sleepovers, has his school, has his sports teams, yes. has everything else in place, but is feeling this unconnected thing, you know, that needs support in that
yeah.
area.
Yeah. So, and we've talked about because I love your Safe Passage book as well, but I'm not getting any highlights of how to fix it. I'm just getting talks of, yes, this is what it is. And I have to say, after 20 years of expat life, it's kind of a bit of, yeah, no shit, Sherlock. I know that's what happens. Tell me how to fix it. I agree with you, Nikki, in that, you know, for me, I've always talked about the stayer because we were always the leaver. And, you know, we did something like, you know, four or five countries in 7 years. We were just always on the go. And then we did sit for a while and I had to experience being the stayer. But I always think with the stayer, the worst thing is when you see the friend's car that they'd sold to someone else, you know, in the expat community, and you drive past their house or you go past your favorite restaurant that you did together, all these things, you know, that you have those continual reminders, whereas the person who's left, the leaver, has, they're always doing something new. But I have to say, you know, I had a really good chat with a girlfriend who left a few years ago. And this is where I think social media can be a bit of a killer in the expat world of, you know, I have not had big chats with this girlfriend for a while, but I've seen all her social media, and in her social media, it looked like everything was fantastic, you know, that things were going really well. And it wasn't until I got on the phone with her that I realized, no, there was a whole lot of underlying stuff that is happening in her life that, you know, and they're not the things that you talk about on Facebook. But I didn't yeah. realize that it had been really hard for her. And I think that is one thing, you know, I'm stating the obvious, but it is that thing we need to remember while if we're having those dark expat days, is that it's not better on the other side 99% of the time. Do you know, we're all just trying to make the most of what we are.
Well, yeah. Well, I think that coming back to Safe Passage Across Networks and No Answers, it does say to allow for grief, to prepare yes. for grief and allow for grief, because grieving is important.
Yes.
So I know it's hard.
That's so true.
That he is grieving, but it is important.
Yes.
To understand and acknowledge it.
Yes.
And not say, you're all right, yes. you know.
And the phrase that I keep getting, because you know, like, you know damn well that your friends who are local and have never lived an expat life are looking at you with great confusion over how you are doing this, you know, and someone yeah. will drop the bottom lip and give you the puppy dog eyes of, oh, you poor thing. But you know that they're thinking, I could never do that. I could never do that.
That's right.
You know, the judgy. And the one phrase that keeps coming out is people say to me, oh, but think, you're building these really resilient children. And I think, Are you, is that a compliment? Like, are you saying that my neglected children are becoming really resilient in spite of me, sort of thing? But you're right, Nikki, that is the whole allow the time for grieving. And I think we've done everything we possibly could to make it as painless as possible. And we have told his school about it, told his teacher about it. But really, apart from them being aware that this is going on in his life and, you know, having his grandmother there to wait on his every need, you know, to be there to talk to him and have his dad there one-on-one. I mean, there are other things that, because I am the person that always tries to find the positive, and to me the positive is that our little guy now has the best of both worlds, where he knows what it's like to be part of a big family and to be the youngest of four, but he is also now going to have this amazing experience where he gets to be the only doted child, you know, because when we're all back there together, which I will be in just a few weeks, he will be this only child that's getting all this attention, and we are going away on a holiday with just him, where I know he's very excited about that. He's just not enjoying, I think, this transition period of mum's there with the other three, and I bet they're having a great time without me.
Yeah.
Which we obviously are not.
No. No, you're not. I didn't see any photos of you paddleboarding on the ocean or no.
Are you telling me I can't paddleboard? Are you telling me I've got to lock myself up in a room and just be miserable?
Pretty much. Well, that's the impression you've got to give on social media. It might be what's really happening. It's just what he can see.
Oh, gee, I think that would make for some great Instagram stories.
I'm so sad sitting here in his bedroom thinking about him.
Yeah. Okay, Nikki, technically expat, what do you got?
Well, I just had something this week. So I went to a coffee morning. It's a regular catch-up in a shopping centre. So on a certain morning every week at the Starbucks, a group of mums sort of just, if they can, just drop in and say hi. And we have three new Australian families at the school since January. Very exciting.
Have you got new friends, Nikki? Are you telling me you've made new friends?
Well,
French meat.
But the group that meets at the shopping centre is not just school mums, so it's a lot of expat mums, but their kids don't necessarily go to the school. So I always think that's nice to have different kinds of friends, meet different kinds of people, you know, outside the environment. So I offered to take these three mums along and they just said yes. So we went there and then we got into a conversation about, because let's not talk about the weather, but it's really, really grim and it's cold and miz. And so it's good time for watching TV shows, etc. So we started, all the people there started having a conversation about what TV shows we were watching and what channels they were on, mm-hmm. and how we were watching them. And then we sort of started talking about VPNs and Apple TV and all this kind of stuff. And these three people just sat there with their mouths open saying, how do you do that? Is there a cheat sheet on this somewhere? And so I just thought that was a really good point. And we have talked to, and one of them said to me, because they know somehow that there's a podcast, I said, do you have an episode of the podcast about this? I said, actually, we do have one, but it would be good to have a cheat sheet as well. So
I think we need to update it. And yeah, so maybe first things first, maybe if we put something in the Facebook group, the Two Fat Expats Facebook group, asking people, hey, how do you watch things? What do you do? And get everybody to share their different things, like maybe say their location and then what they use, or what they may have heard someone else do, just in case they were worried that that might get them in trouble. Because I obviously would never do anything like that, but I have known people that would do things like that, and I would share what those people do. Okay. But yeah, and
absolutely. And the other thing that was very helpful for these ladies to know, so in Australia, one of them had always accessed shows on pay TV through BitTorrent sites, etc., which are borderline stuff. In Europe, they will send you a massive fine. So they track down your IP address and send you a fine if you ever downloaded something illegally or over BitTorrent that they consider to be copyright. And there is story after story, sad story after story in expat Facebook groups in Europe, particularly Germany, of people who've been sent massive fines because their kid downloaded half a game or half a movie or something, and you really do have to pay the fines. That Germany is quite strict about it, so that was also good information to share. So there's all sorts of that kind of information that that is worthwhile sharing, because people can end up with tricky situations that they didn't know were going to happen.
And what we will do, Nikki, because we are going to release our Fat Expats magazine in the next couple of months, we will put a little cheat sheet in the magazine for people. Moving on to expat money. And, Nikki, you got to speak to Mr. X this week. How did it go?
It went really well. We had a lovely chat. I was right. I had met him before. We talked this week about buckets. So last week, Mr. X spoke a little bit about buckets. And this week, we asked him just to drill down on that a little bit and explain in a bit more detail what those buckets are. And so that's what I talked to him about. Mr. X, thank you for coming back. I just wanted to say thanks so much for last week. We had a lot of great feedback, and we'll be having some questions come directly to you from our listeners. But for this week, we just wanted to expand a little bit on the buckets that you talked about last week and what those buckets are and how many we should have and what countries they should be in and where and all those sorts of things.
Right, got it. Thanks for having me back. Yeah, it's great to be back, and you look forward to talking about those buckets.
So how many buckets should we have?
Well, really, it comes down to, I usually say people, it's really three. So I talked about last week about paying yourself first, and all that is just setting up an automatic direct debit to your buckets so that you do make sure that you pay yourself first and not get caught up with just saving at the end of the month with what's left over. So really making it a priority. But in terms of the buckets, it's really three, and I'll go through them one by one. Okay. The first bucket that everyone should have is your emergency fund. And that's really important because just life happens along the way, whether you're just starting out with your financial plan or you're starting out as an expat or you've been an expat for a long time, having those emergency funds is really, really important because most people have some form of negative financial event at some point, you know, in your life. So how much should go into that bucket one? Well, typically I'll say it's about 3 months of expenses. And when I say typically, that's for really people back in your home country. But as expats, we've also got to factor in the cost of maybe returning back or moving to a new country. So really, I think for expats, it's 6 months of expenses. So work out what your rent or your mortgage payments are, your bills, utilities, and your living expenses, etc., and how much it's going to be. That can be quite a big figure. And some people might say, oh, look, I don't really think I need or want so much money just sort of sitting there in cash and emergency fund. But it's really important in case something bad happens or you lose your job or, you know, something like that. So that number could be $10,000, pounds, euros, it could be more.
Should that bucket include things like moving a container from one country to another and flights and?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so you could, what you could, you do it two ways. Either say 3 months of salary in case something sort of happens while I'm here, and 3 months of, 3 months of expenses is pretty okay for that, plus your moving expenses, or just sort of 6 months worth of expenses. And that's it's a rule of thumb, really. Yeah.
And then once that bucket is full, so.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. So once you've got that, or maybe you have that now and you're sort of sitting there in cash, what I'll also say is that once that bucket is full and you've got about 6 months of expenses, anything more than that really should be invested, because otherwise you're just sitting there in cash doing nothing. And some people like to see a big cash amount in their bank account and feel great. Okay, that's my emergency. But maybe you've got a couple of $100,000 sitting there. That's too much. You should be getting that working for you, because interest rates are really low in the bank. And of course, inflation is getting higher and higher all around the world. So your money's just going backwards. So definitely get it invested somewhere.
Okay.
So I'll jump to the third bucket now. And the third bucket that you should have is your retirement fund. And you can imagine the second one is the stuff in the middle. So for your retirement fund, you should have, firstly, make sure your emergency fund's set up. Secondly, set up how much you're going to need in retirement. Now, how much do you need? There's some good software out there, or you can talk to a financial advisor and work out how much you actually need. But I'll talk as a real rule of thumb is that it shouldn't be less than 15 to 20% of your gross salary. So the amount you get before tax, take about 15 to 20% of that, and that should be the amount. The other way of looking at it as a rule of thumb is to say, it's an old saying, half your age as a percent of your wage. It's a really old one, but that means if you're 40, you should be saving about 20%. If you're 50, you should be saving about 25% of the pre-tax income.
Okay, so in some countries there is no tax, and so that kind of makes it fun and easy. And then there's some countries like I live in that have quite a high tax, and then they also have they have like a superannuation retirement program that you participate in as an employee.
Yes.
Should I have another bucket on top of that?
Yeah, so the answer is perhaps. With countries such as you're in, Nikki, you can actually explore. It is good to contribute to the local country's retirement fund. It's usually very tax efficient. It's usually a good range of investment options, etc. But if you've got something back home in the UK, Australia, or wherever you're from, there are double tax agreements between most Western countries, some Asian countries, and you would be not. It's not mandatory for you to contribute to a lot of the European retirement funds if you show that you are contributing to one back in your home country. So you've got that option.
Some countries like Australia, where I'm from, if you're an expat, you can top up to X percent or X number of dollars per year. Is that right?
So for example, Australia depends on the superannuation fund that you're in, and most of the big ones do allow you to contribute from overseas. You might think that's not the case, and a lot of people don't think that's the case, but you can. Check with your super fund, and the maximum usually is about 100,000 Aussie dollars a year. The same goes for, you know, Brits. You can contribute to your pension back in the UK, depending on who's running that. So check with your pension fund back home and look at the maximum amount that you contribute to per year, because they do allow it.
Okay, cool. And what's the other bucket?
So the other bucket then is really all the stuff in the middle. So it's the basically the middle bucket, but that often can be broken down into smaller subsections as well, such as your kids' education planning or saving up for a house. But I'll only say really do those investments once you've got certainly your first bucket set up and you've got something away for your retirement, and then look at how much you can put towards this midterm fund. That should be in something which is invested but accessible. The first bucket should be invested really in cash, accessible at any time. The third one should be not accessible. Now, if you perhaps think you might need to dip into it, well then, okay, there are some pension funds and retirement savings plans that you can set up which give you access. But that should be not accessible. That should be rather adventurous or aggressive. You can afford to be, because you've got a long time until you retire if you're a younger person. But the middle one should be, sort of in a balanced fund which is accessible.
Okay, and with the first bucket, the get out of jail free plan, where should that bucket be? What country should you keep that money in?
That's a really good question. With in Europe, if you're an expat in Europe, great. European banks are fantastic. If you're in Asia and you're a expat in Asia, you can set up an account there with no problem. And if you leave that country, the bank's great. In the Middle East, not so much, because if your job ends, you may have to close your bank account, or they may freeze your bank account as well. So it's a good idea to set it up in another country. You can set it up in your home country, and there's no tax implications of that because you're not resident. And like I said last week, make sure you tell your country back home that you're not resident anymore. And you can keep an account back home. That's no problem. If you want to set up something in offshore, an offshore bank account isn't illegal, as some people may think, or it's not dodgy, or it's just a bank account which is set up for people moving and living around the world. And the Isle of Man in the UK has some really good ones there that with big banks and big names that you can invest in, or you have a bank account in US dollars or euros or pounds or whatever you want. For people who are earning US dollar equivalents, and that's a lot of people in the Middle East and Asia, then a really good place to keep your money is actually the US. It's really easy. And a lot of people think, gee, I don't want to get involved in the US tax or anything like that. It's not. There's no tax implications. You're not resident. The catch is you've got to fly over there and open one. But anyone from around the world can fly over to the US, go to Wells Fargo Bank, for instance, and open a bank account in about 45 minutes. That bank account will have good online access. You can send your money there. And once money is in the US, it can be transferred around the world really easily, because a lot of countries really accept US dollars and from US bank accounts really easily. And also, the US has the highest level of bank security on your deposits. It's up to $250,000 if that bank goes bankrupt. You're actually insured for as well, which is the highest in the world. It's really, really good. So don't be afraid of doing that. If you're earning sort of US dollar equivalent in the Middle East or Asia, or want to open a US dollar bank account, just fly over there on your next holiday and open a bank account in Wells Fargo or Bank of America or one of the other big ones.
Okay, that's really interesting advice. And it doesn't impact then, there's no FBAR you have to complete. Mm-hmm. You don't become part of that whole US tax system.
No, they are pretty strict on opening. So you've just got to bring your, obviously your ID documents. You've got to bring a proof of address, and you've got to bring a proof of income. If you've got from a big-ish company or a decent-sized company as well, a decent proof of income, a proof of address and your ID, it can be really, really fast, that situation, and to not be part of any bad tax implications at the US, it's not applicable to you.
Okay, great. That's awesome. So, and with the middle bucket, so that's quite a broad group of things. Do you suggest that all goes in one account, or do you suggest there are separate accounts for that?
To make things easier sort of for you psychologically is to have the different accounts for that. Then you just know how much you've got and how much you're going to be taking out from that. But that can be, it can be all together. There's no benefit to having it all together. The compound interest will still be the same, or the compound returns, if you split it up or if you put it all in one. But really, my advice is always to set up your funds, or those buckets, with a time frame on them, and have your attitude to risk, whether it's a very cautious or a balanced or an adventurous portfolio for that goal, matched to the time frame. So if it's something that's, if you've got young kids and they're going to be going to university in 15, 18 years, well, then that can be a reasonably balanced to adventurous portfolio. Whereas if you want to buy a house in the next 3 years, you're going to be probably more a bit cautious with that one. So make sure that the segmentation within your bucket sort of has those attitudes to risk, effectively planned for the time frame.
Great. Thank you so much. I probably might have more questions later, and I'm sure some of our listeners might too. So we might have to keep talking about buckets in weeks to come, but that was a really, really great explanation for us. Thank you very much.
Okay. Oh, I love that. I love that. I love that. I love that. Now, obviously, Nikki, those who've been around for a while know that I work for a guy called the Barefoot Investor, and he too talks about his buckets. And for any of, because I was surprised, we do have quite a few barefooters in our Too Fat Expert Pat's group, but his three buckets he calls blow, mojo, and grow. So the blow is your expenses and, your money that you're just spending on a weekly basis. Your mojo is that safety money that Nigel talked about, which is the I need to exit fast and get out of here. Yep. And then the grow is your long-term wealth. So whether that's your retirement money. And I know a lot of people try to do 60-20-20, but then once they've got their mojo up and running, well, then they can obviously take that 20 and put it elsewhere. Interesting thing with that, having the 6 months of money, I think a really good aim for an expat would be to get that money right away, like make that your first step, like that you've got that six yes. months, because then you'll have that feeling of, oh my God, what if we lose our jobs and we're stranded in XYZ, is gone. Do you know? You just know that you've got that 6 months. You know that you're covered if anything goes wrong. And it can be quite overwhelming, I guess, when you're trying to think, okay, well, how do we get that 6 months worth of money? Like if you're a new expat, what do you do? That's a lot of money to like have in your back pocket. So I guess that's when you look at if there's any possibility of bonuses that you get, that those bonuses go into that mojo, or that if you're doing any overtime, if you happen to, I mean, I don't know if a lot of people get paid overtime, but if you're in that situation, if you're more an overtime than bonus person, if you want to start selling stuff, if you want to do a Marie Kondo and decide that things aren't giving you joy and that you can afford to sell them, but that is a great way. If you take up a second job or if you go back to work, that is where you put that money. Any online work. And of course, you could always sell a kidney. Only joking.
Also, like if you're a new expat, it's really, you're there and you're like, wow, we've got to make the most of it. Right. What's happening? First holiday break. Let's go. Maybe yes. you miss the first holiday break and put that money towards it, because yes. then you'll know that yeah. money will be there. And I don't begrudge a holiday, but honestly, having that money there makes it so much more. And as Mr. X said, the odds are, not that it will happen to you, but you will have a financial setback at some time in your life. So having that money there, it's there forever. So yes. once it's there, it's there. No one can yes. take it away from you.
That's right.
Especially if it's in a bank account in America, apparently.
Yes. That was all news to me. I didn't realize, you know, we shut down all of our bank accounts in America when we left, thinking that we had to, you know, that we were doing the right thing. And I think I'd really like to have a little bank account in America, you know, to, yeah.
Well, I was worried about having to give mine up once the house sale goes through, because we won't have a US address, et cetera, et cetera. But now I'm yes. thinking perhaps I won't have to give it up. Perhaps I can just give them my new address and it'll keep going. Let's see yeah. how that goes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Mr. X was great. Now, there's other stuff that I'd love to talk about that he kind of sort of scratched on, and that was when he got to the Middle East and said why you shouldn't leave your money there, right? And I think we'll talk about this another time, but I think it's really important that, yes, if you are an expat in Europe or an expat in Asia, that's fine. You just set up your local bank accounts and you're fine. But if you are a woman in the Middle East, please do not do that. I have a friend at the moment who has a husband who has an illness that he will not recover from, and you know, there is a fear of if something was to happen to him before she got all of their affairs in order, because I know that it will go to Sharia law if he dies in the country. And then the company have basically told her, yes, you will have a problem if that happens. We need to get this all sorted before he passes. So I think be very aware of that. None of us know what's around the corner. I don't want to be a downer about it, because I know that, you know, none of us like to think about anything going terribly wrong. But the reality is it can. And if you have these things sorted, it will be so much smoother for you than if you don't. Do you know?
Absolutely.
All right, Nikki. Location, location, location. You went somewhere where I have never been and I'm busting to go.
Yeah, I've only ever been for work. Like I've never been on a holiday. I just used to go sometimes for work. So I haven't ever been there for the full experience either. But I spoke to Sarah, who is originally from the UK, and she emigrated with her husband to Australia and they lived in Melbourne. And then they had what Sarah referred to as a bit of a midlife crisis. And they went, this is amazing, they went to the Philippines to live on their life savings and coach ultimate frisbee, because she and her husband are ultimate frisbee coaches. And they went for 8 months, but then that got stretched out to 2 years when her husband got a job there. And then her husband's job moved to Tokyo, where they've only been for 2 months. Now, when I was going to speak to her, she said, I've only been here for 2 months. I said, that's perfect, because sometimes we speak to people that have been there 10 years, sometimes 2 years. You know, 2 months is a really good, it's a good indication. It's you know, and in the first months you have that up and down, that roller coaster, that love, hate, the whole thing. So I thought it was a good thing. So she, Sarah and her husband live in T for Tokyo, and they have two kids who are 12 and 8. And I started off with the same question that I ask everybody. So on a scale of 1 to 10, what's your current level of in love with Tokyo?
Yeah, we're probably around a 4 at the moment.
And is that on the way up?
Yeah, I think it's on the way up. I'm not loving it as much. My husband likes it. My kids like it. They're quite happy to be here. I'm a little less happy. It's a big change, and it's growing on me, but it's going to take time.
And what, so far, so 6 months, so you've obviously been out and about investigating all the things. What's your best local find so far?
We live in just kind of just the west of Shibuya, in a place near Shimokitazawa, which is a very kind of trendy, artsy coffee shops and secondhand vintage clothes kind of area. So there's a lot of really nice restaurants and places to go and visit around that area. And we have a great tonkatsu restaurant just on our street that we go to on Friday nights for tonkatsu. So that's kind of the kids' treat at the end of the week. So yeah, that's really good. I think it's just more little local gems, like finding a nice Italian coffee shop that opens early in the morning where I can sit and drink my coffee and, you know, chill out and stuff.
What drives you crazy? You might have more than one thing.
Drives me crazy. I think I'm not, it's a very different culture here, the way that people conduct themselves in meetings and the way decisions get made. And I haven't been to many meetings, but when I have had to participate, I have to hold my tongue and sit quietly and let the process happen. And it seems rather, it's just different. It's not what I'm used to. People don't like to say no. They like to, if you bring up an idea and nobody really likes it, they won't say, yeah, I'm not sure about that. They just kind of drifts into silence. And then you have to assume if nobody has said yes, that means no. And you have to let it go and then have to move on to something else. Yes. That's my experience. The culture here is just very different. So yeah.
What's one place you'd love to live?
Where would I love to live? It's a good question. Wow. I think I'd actually strangely love to live in Brisbane. I think Brisbane's pretty much a small city, great climate for me. I like the heat, enough interest, enough things to do, but a reasonable price for the cost of living, I think. Yeah, so I think I'd be quite happy in Brisbane.
What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given about living an expat life or the way of life that you've chosen to move to different countries?
The best piece of advice? I think the best advice I was given was you need to keep an open mind. You have to kind of try and reserve your initial judgments and feelings and just know that it's going to take a while. It's going to take at least 18 months to really get used to a place and to figure out whether you like it or not, and to just try and go with it. Because if you get there and you just decided you hate it, you will hate it. So you need to try and go with it and try and see the best aspects of it. And yeah, and then, you know, you'll possibly get to a point where you do love the place. So.
And perhaps a little bit related, what's the biggest lesson that you've learnt?
I think just to try and reserve judgment about things. It's very easy to see things and go, oh, that's not right. Why are they doing it like that? And without actually knowing any of the history or any of the reasons why, because, you know, every country has their own unique history and their own way of doing things, which has brought them to where they are. And you have to respect that and try and fit in with it as best you can. Yeah. So I think that.
And it would be a little bit remiss of me now, given the world resurgence in interest and online. Marie Kondo, big in Japan or not?
I don't know. I've only seen it on Netflix, to be honest, and on Facebook. I have not really heard anyone in Japan that I know talking about it. So I think it's maybe a bit more of a phenomenon for overseas, because also in Japan and Tokyo, houses are very small. I think people have to, you know, generally have less things.
Only live with things that give them joy.
Yes, and the sparking joy. Yeah, I think they generally have to live with less things because they have less space. So I don't know if it's quite as necessary here as it is in other places where, you know, you have a huge house and you fill every room. So I'm not really sure. I haven't heard any Japanese people talking about it.
I just had to ask, just because it's everywhere at the moment. It's having its resurgence since Netflix. And one other thing we ask people is if you have a recommendation of a podcast you listen to, a movie you've just watched, or a book you're reading or read that you would like to recommend, you think other people would enjoy.
Book I read recently, but I can't remember the author. It was called The Happiness Project.
Yes.
I can't remember who that was, but
I have a friend that read it when we lived in South Africa, and she found it very helpful.
Yeah, it is very helpful. It's very helpful to try and adjust your mindset to be more open to things and to try and, you know, see the upside rather than the downside, basically. And I think it also kind of reminded me that you know, you have to change your routines, and you have to think, you know, in this country, I used to do this and I loved it. And it's like, well, if you can't do it in the next country, then you have to find something else. You know, you have to adapt and find happiness in other places and other things that are available to you in that place. So yeah, that's what I'm going for.
I always think it's interesting when someone has to say, it's growing on me.
But think about it. It's really different to Manila. Like, it's just,
yeah.
They're both in Asia. You think, oh, they're both in Asia, but they're totally different cultures and environments.
Yes.
And I just would think it would be such a change.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, look, I thought it was really interesting. I've had friends who were in Tokyo, but they were very far out of the city, and they loved it, but they did talk about Tokyo's wackiness, you know, that I think Japanese culture is so fascinating, isn't it? Like there are
tons of lots of little subcultures.
Yes.
Yeah. Lots of things going on.
Yeah. Yes. That's exactly it. There are so many different little subcultures and so many lovely, the quaintness, you know, of it, of the rules and the gentleness, but just complete wackiness, and you know, the knickers in the vending machines at the train stop, you know, that's a little bit different than if maybe you'd been in Qatar for 9 years. Not a lot of knickers in vending machines. Was there.
I had to look up. I also had to Google the type of restaurant that she talked about.
Yes.
That they went to on a Friday
night. What is it? What is it?
I don't even know what that is.
Yeah. And what is
it? Well, it's a tonkatsu. Yeah. Tonkatsu. It's a Japanese dish which consists of breaded, deep fried pork cutlet.
Yeah.
And the two main types are fillet and loin. So like a deep fried schnitty. And it's often served with shredded cabbage. So this is like obviously a whole restaurant with that. That's just amazing.
Now, Nikki, amazing. You're going to have to explain the schnitty to our non-Australian listeners. So a Wiener schnitzel in Australia is commonly known as a schnitty. And you might go to the pub on a Thursday night for a schnitty that will literally hang off both sides of your plate. So, yes.
Okay, reading. Kirsty, what are you reading right now?
There is an article that's going around. It was in the ABC. It was written by Ginger Gorman, and it's called Internet Trolls Are Not Who I Thought. They're Even Scarier. So Ginger's written a book called Troll Hunting, and this article is kind of, you know, one of those little intros to the book. But I thought it was really interesting of who she said trolls were and the percentages of them. I was quite surprised by how many of them were women. I think it was something like 34% of them were women. I might have that wrong, maybe more. But, yeah, not the uneducated, you know, pimply loners stuck down in the basement that people probably think they are, and also just why some of them are really scary people.
I thought one of the interesting things that she said about trolls are they are often teenagers who were left online to their own devices for a long time, or children. So people that probably may not have learnt that internet etiquette. And that was kind of scary because, I mean, I think every parent, well, to give you an idea, I went to an information night last night for school for one of my children, and the male teacher stood up and told us about, you know, technology and why it could be a terrible thing, you know, and why you shouldn't let your child be on there. He said that they had started capturing children's screen time, and there was one child who'd spent 52 hours on a social media platform that week. Fascinating when you think about it.
So they had started capturing children's screen time in what way? Are they Facebook now? And then what are they doing? Are they Facebook recording every
No. Well, that was another thing, Nikki, that I thought was interesting. What he said was they had done it as a class exercise. So there was no shame and blame. There was, okay, guys, we're all going to put this on our phones and we're all going to have a look at our screen time, you know, in a week, you know, as an exercise. So this girl sort of came back in and said, oh my God, I did 52 hours, you know, on Snapchat or whatever it was.
Yet Facebook does it, pays everyone $20 to put the app on their phone, and there's outrage.
Yeah.
A teacher does it and it's considered an exercise in learning.
Yes. But one of the other things was he said, and he was not suggesting that parents do it by any means, but he was saying, you know, there is something called, I'll have to go and have a look. It might be the Truth Spy or some sort of software that you could put on your child's device, and then you would see everything they'd looked at and everything they'd done on their phone, which just sent a shiver down my spine, because I would sincerely hope, look, I know that my kids would see things that I wouldn't want them to see. My kids are big now, right? You know, they're in that teen world where things get sent and you just have to hope that, you know, things are okay. By the time they get to 18, well, they're an adult, right? It's not, we're past.
I know, but I don't think it's ever too late to say never forward a dick pic.
Oh, God, yeah.
I don't think it's too late to say
that. No, it's never too late. And I think, I mean, the interesting thing is they see it all the time with their sports people, do you know? Like, we've just had one here, 27-year-old sports person here, went to the Oktoberfest, snorted the white powder that isn't illegal, you know, the menthol and glucose powder that people snort at Oktoberfest.
Not familiar.
Oh, really? And you're in Germany. Oh, my God, I'm about to tell you something that happens in Germany. So, yes, I actually learned about this in Qatar. And once again, I'm going to be really annoying and not know the name of it, but I could maybe look it up while I was talking. Yes, so there is this white powder that is very popular at Oktoberfest. Type it in while I'm talking. And it isn't. There is nothing illegal about it at all. And I was in Qatar and a man had it at the table that I was at. And I immediately thought the worst and thought, my God, what are you doing in Qatar with that white stuff, putting it up your nose? But no, it's, here we go, German white powder. It is called Weizenpulver. So, yeah. It
means white powder.
Yes.
That's white powder
in
German.
And it is basically glucose. It's like snuff. It's the old-fashioned sort of snuff. And I think the idea is you drank lots of beer. Yeah, it's a glucose and menthol. That you've drank lots of beer and this thing's going to, you know, give you a wide open, woo, you know, wide awake and whatever. So kind of with that whole menthol thing. Anyway, a footballer here has gone to Oktoberfest, but of course he has snorted it off some girl's bosom and it's everywhere. And the whole conversation this week in the media was, the guy's 27, at what stage do you learn that people video these things and they land in WhatsApp groups and that they get shared with everybody? And, you know, you just sit there as a parent going, well, I think I've, you know, I am sure that 27-year-old man is well aware that that is the case, that he has been educated by professionals throughout his career that that is the case, but still it happened. Do you know,
How do you stop that? I don't know.
I don't know is the answer. But one of the questions I want to ask, in the article about the trolls, does it say that she befriended a troll?
Oh, I can't remember. No, does I don't think in that? The article. I think that's in the book, but maybe not. And I'm sorry, I don't have the article open in front of me.
Yeah. No, because I heard about her book this week. I was listening to a podcast with Carly Finlay talking about her new book, Say Hello.
Hello, Carly Finlay.
Hello, Carly Finlay, indeed. So I was listening to Carly on a podcast talk about her new book, and she has done work with Ginger Gorman about trolls because a lot of what she does is advocacy, online advocacy. And I thought that she said somewhere that Ginger Gorman befriended a troll, or it's discussed in the book. So it made me put the book on my list of things to read. So after reading the article, do you want to read the book?
Yes, I do. I do. I am quite interested in it. Look, it kind of floats into that world of John Ronson, you know, when he talked about, So, but no, I would be interested in the whole troll thing. I think too, because I live in a world as a community manager and look at what people write online. And I'm quite often looking at what people write about my boss, which is 99% beautiful and lovely. But then just the anger and outrage of others who just have obviously decided it's not their thing, but feel the need to just be so brutal and awful in their response. And you do. I read a lot of things about in groups and communities, and you think, God, you know, that must be exhausting to be that angry and nasty. Yeah. Yes. Anyway, one of the other things that Ginger Gorman wrote was she wrote a news article about what happens when someone dies on a plane. And I just thought for our expat audience, that might be quite interesting. But one of the stats in that was that since 2014 in Australia, 34 people have died on planes, you know, where they've come landed into Australia dead. And there was
I read that.
And there was a story about how the steward sort of floated past, you know, with his trolley, and the man said, oh, nothing for my father, he's passed away. I just thought, that's a bit cash. And he'd obviously been dead for a while. So, yeah, interesting. But if you want to know, Nikki, that's how you get a business class seat, because that's what they will do. They will move you up to business class if you die.
Okay. I'd rather keep my economy seat and get there to the other end. But, yes, I did read that article and I thought it was a little bit relevant to the expat community, because we are traveling planes are not a lot, not because that will happen to us, but because we will know what to be prepared for in that situation. Yes.
Now, what are you watching, Nikki?
What am I watching? I went to the movies on a movie date, a double date with another couple last Sunday night. And we went to their house, just had a quick sort of sausage pasta, was very nice. And then we went to the movies and we saw Green Book, which was really, really good. I really enjoyed it. It's nominated for some Oscars. Both the main actors are nominated. And it's a story of when a white guy, who's Tony Lip, a bouncer from an Italian-American neighborhood in the Bronx, is hired to drive Dr. Don Shirley, a world-class black pianist, on a concert tour from Manhattan to the Deep South. And they must rely on something called the Green Book, which was really called the Negro Motorist Green Book, which was a series of guidebooks that listed for African-American travelers the restaurants and hotels that wouldn't refuse them service and warn them about places that they would be under threat of arrest or physical violence in the 60s.
Oh, wow.
And so it's sort of the reverse of what was happening in the South. So this guy hired a white driver so he could be protected, but it was the whole process of the story. Now, I really enjoyed the movie. It's got Tony Lip is played by Viggo Mortensen.
Yes.
I think that's how you pronounce it. I can never say his name properly. And then Dr. Don Shirley is played by Mahershala Ali, who is a brilliant actor. And I really, really enjoyed it. But it, apparently, it's problematic. So, it's based on a true story, which is like so many things. They obviously take it did actually happen, this particular trip. And the person who wrote the movie and the book and then what became the movie was the son of Tony Lip, the driver. So he wrote it from his perspective. And since the movie has come out, the family of Dr. John Shirley have come out and said that's not really how it happened. And they had some issues with it. So Mahershala Ali actually apologised to the family and contacted them and said, look, I wasn't aware that there were any family or anyone was going to have a buy on this. And the movie has also been given some criticism by saying it's sort of the white, it's a bit of a white saviour thing. So he was hired to drive him. He was racist. The black person taught him how not to be racist. So the white person triumphs being not racist, whereas the black person has no development in the movie, if you know what I mean. It's so, look, I just watched the movie and I really enjoyed it. Then I read the articles afterwards and I understand what the articles mean, and they compared it to The Help,
right,
which said that similar things. So I think maybe Viola Davis has come out and said that she's unhappy to have been associated with The Help since the movie. She could see that it's problematic. Yeah. The Help is another movie I really enjoyed. So, but I accept that I can enjoy a movie and still see that there are problematic issues with it.
And that's the great thing about art. It creates discussion.
Correct. Yeah. So I would, if someone wanted to see the movie, I would absolutely recommend that you see it because I really enjoyed it. And my husband, who, if I had said to him, do you want to come to the movies and watch Green Book with me? He would have said no. But I said, do you want to go to dinner and then go to a movie with this couple? And he said, yes. So that's another tip.
Clever.
And afterwards he said, yeah, I really enjoyed that. What about you? What have you been watching?
Super Bowl. So this week was Super Bowl. And, you know, I think it's getting bigger in Australia. But, of course, in Australia it is a Monday morning that it's on. And, Nikki, it was in your old neck of the woods, wasn't it?
It was. Because
it was in Atlanta. Yeah. And so I am fascinated by Super Bowl. I'm fascinated by many things, but how Australian sports people deal with Super Bowl and how there are some very big Australian figures that make their way over to Super Bowl every year and set up on Media Row and get involved and have functions, and almost in the same way as a film festival. Do you know when you see Australians set up G'day LA or G'day, you know, whatever, and promote Australia in that way? So it's always interesting to see who's there, that James Packer, you know, goes along, and Eddie Maguire, and different Australia, you know, that would mean nothing to anyone who wasn't Australian. But I'm always interested in the backstory of how that works. And of course, you can't help but compare the spectacle of the Super Bowl in the States to what we do in Australia for our AFL and NRL grand finals, and which bits we get right and which bits we get wrong. But I think
there's no comparison.
Well, I don't know. Well, I don't think there should be. I think they're very different beasts, and there are some great things about the AFL grand final that I would not like to be what happens in the Super Bowl. Do you know, like I'm very happy with the daytime game. You know, whereas there's been a lot of talk in Australia about should we move it to the nighttime, do you know? And I think I'm happy with the traditions of that, and I'm happy with the MCG being the hollowed ground of the grand final. Do you know, I think I would feel quite gypped if I've never been to an AFL grand final, but I would feel gypped if the year I decided I was going, they said, well, actually, this year we're going to move it. We're going to have it in Sydney. I would think, no, because that is not the AFL grand final if it's not at the MCG. But anyway, that's all by the by. I thought what was fascinating about Super Bowl this year was just the Tom Brady story and if he was truly the GOAT, and the conversation about is he as good as Joe Montana was? Were they similar players? Were they not? But I got so swept up in the whole Tom Brady story. And I know that there are people that hate the Patriots. They absolutely cannot stand the Patriots and they cannot stand it. But I thought it was incredible to watch in the way that even if you hate them and even if you're not a Tom Brady fan, we now live in a time where we saw this man win 6 rings and we saw this moment of history, do you know? And it really was a moment in history. So I thought it was great. I've we'll attach a YouTube link for an NFL story they did on Tom Brady when he made the 5 rings, because he does have one of those incredible stories of he was a huge 49ers fan. His family were a 49ers family. The 49ers were looking for a quarterback. They did not choose him, and they weren't the only ones. He didn't get chosen until, I think, round 6 of the draft.
Yeah, 6
So
rounds.
You can imagine. You can imagine all those teams that would now be looking at what Tom Brady has become. So, yeah, all just very interested. But, Nikki, I'm guessing your husband would have been interested in the Super Bowl. I'm not sure if you would have been as much.
Well, my husband's a Steelers fan, so once they're out, he's out.
Right.
So he wasn't particularly interested. I was interested in that I wanted Tom Brady to lose. So I'm on the other team. We were in the States through Deflategate. Patriots beating the Falcons. The Falcons are my only team now. So being Atlanta based. So, and I'm a part-time supporter, as I am with everything, as you know, Kirsty. But you're right. You're totally right. The Patriots are that team that either you love them or everyone hates them. Who are you going for? Anyone but the Patriots. You know, anyone playing the Patriots, I'll get behind them. And I would say that was probably 66% of America on Sunday night.
Right.
And the other 33 were behind the Patriots because they have a massive base as well. So, yeah, I was interested in the Super Bowl. I did wake up and it was the first thing I checked because it was right in the really bad time of night for us. I do enjoy American football and all the pageantry that goes with it. I didn't before I moved there and I didn't understand it. And we used to have a Super Bowl party in our basement every Super Bowl night, and all our neighbors would come and we'd have bad, bad Super Bowl food and, and watch the halftime show. But the halftime show was very disappointing this year.
Yeah.
And that's also become very controversial. So the whole thing's really a little bit controversial these days.
But I think, you know, they say that the halftime entertainment was disappointing, but I think they were just being Maroon 5. That's who they are. They're not exciting. They're not the Rolling Stones. They're not Lady Gaga. They're Maroon 5. Do you know, like, you wouldn't get as excited about going to see Maroon 5 as you would seeing Gaga or Madonna.
Well,
or
and that's the thing. Whoever. They couldn't get any of those people. And they could get Maroon 5, and that's why Maroon 5 failed. The other thing is it was a Pepsi halftime show in Atlanta, and Atlanta is a Coke city.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's no Pepsi allowed in Atlanta airport. I mean, it is a Coke city.
Yeah.
And Pepsi were very gracious. They gave some signs and they said, you know, thanks for having us. We appreciate that we can come together as a country from time to time. So there was a little bit, the cola wars were a little bit funny and tongue in cheek. I follow all the other side of it, I guess. The football's meh for me, but I love the pageantry and the whole part of it. I enjoy that.
Yes, I loved it. Okay, so I have been listening to, it's got a fabulous name. It's a podcast about, well, actually, I actually started listening to it as a radio show on Life Matters on the ABC. It's called We've Got This, Parenting with a Disability. And each week there's a different family and a different disability. The family where both parents are blind, there's a family where the mother is quadriplegic. It kind of explores the complexities of parenting when you have a disability and then challenging the stigmas and the stereotypes that come with it. For instance, the woman who's a quadriplegic has said that she's actually had people say to her that she was quite selfish having a baby, which I do not know how you go through life without wanting to punch people in the face that would say anything like that. But it's really, really good. It's that same thing, brilliantly told by Eliza Hull, who is a parent with a disability, and I would strongly recommend it. What about you?
Oh, that sounds fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I have been listening to something far less virtuous, I guess, The Dropout, the story of Elizabeth Holmes, who basically one of the biggest frauds of all time. She had a company called Theranos, which was a healthcare company, and it was invested in by some massive people with massive amounts of money. The Kraft family, the DeVos family, Rupert Murdoch, they're all investors.
Yeah.
And it was actually one of Rupert Murdoch's journalists that eventually uncovered the scam. And there's been a lot of interesting commentary about that. But anyway, I had read bits and pieces and articles about it. I'd heard people recommend there's a book called Bad Blood. And then I saw this podcast. I thought, okay, I'm listening to the podcast first. And basically Theranos was a healthcare company that promised a revolution in blood testing. So it promised it could prick your finger and then tell you basically any disease you had or anything. Just do blood testing on the spot in a tiny little machine.
Yeah.
And basically it was all a fraud. It was all a fraud. It never worked. It was never able to work. The science is not there. And this woman raised billions of dollars. It was once, I think it was a $10 billion valued company. And she is basically the Bernie Madoff of the healthcare industry. So she got all these people to invest and there was nothing behind it. And it really is it's interesting. I've only listened to the first episode, but I'm definitely going to listen to the whole thing.
Right. So I want to
strong recommend there as well.
Okay. And that's called The Dropout.
The Dropout. Okay. Yes.
All right. Okay. Nikki, that's us. We are done.
We are done.
So, Nikki, I will be in Australia again next week, but we will have Mr. X coming back. And if anyone has any questions for Mr. X, please head over to twofatexpats.com, click on the microphone and record your message.
And if you have a spare minute or two and you've never rated us on iTunes, it's really fun. You just go onto the iTunes app and give us a rating and review and we would be really appreciative and it helps other people find the podcast.
Okay. I'll speak to you next week, Nikki.
Bye-bye.
Bye.